for individuals interested in the medical field. Welcome to the Doc Talk Podcast, where doctors from around the world discuss groundbreaking work in the medical industry. Because in an ever-changing world, healthcare is constant.
Welcome to the fourth episode of the Doc Talk. I hope my listeners are well physically, mentally, and emotionally. I am proud to announce the surgeon I am interviewing for this episode. Dr. Varun Dixit's philosophy is, if you want to do something, do it right. And it has served him well academically and professionally. He was trained as a plastic surgeon at the coveted LTMMC Mumbai and has the unique distinction of securing the gold medal at both MS in general surgery and MCH plastic surgery exams at the University of Mumbai. He further honed his cosmetic surgery skills by training with an American board-certified plastic surgeon. He is the co-director of a dedicated cosmetic surgery center, Make Change Clinic, located at the heart of Mumbai City. His clinic, through years of delivering cosmetic surgery results of the highest standards and by adhering to ethical practices, is now a highly respected and renowned center for aesthetic surgery. Dr. Varun Dixit's practice includes several celebrities from the movie, television, and film, fashion industry. This has been the result of his keen awareness of importance of minimizing scars and his dedication to delivering lasher-looking results. A perfectionist by nature, we are pleased to welcome Dr. Dixit to the Doc Talk podcast.
Yeah, hello, Tanishka. Thank you. Thank you very much for the kind welcome.
Thank you, Doctor. Of course, I have a few questions lined up because of this opportunity that we wanted to make the most of. Doctor, have you encountered any craniofacial or hand deformities that you've had to deal with as a plastic surgeon?
Yes, as a plastic surgeon during my training period, I've come across various cases with, you know, congenital anomalies or various kind of craniofacial and hand anomalies as well. So I've seen my share of a lot of craniosynostosis, in which, you know, the suture lines or the bones on the skull immaturely fuse up. So they cause problems with the brain growth and other aspects of the child's development, and therefore requires kind of a semi-emergency kind of a surgery in some cases. The other kind of cases that I have encountered on the craniofacial front are something called as hypertelorism. That means where the distance between the two eyes is very wide, so they are set a little too wide apart. So it kind of gives one, it causes visual disturbances and also causes some amount of associated with some amount of problems in the brain development. So therefore, these kind of cases also require surgery that needs to be done as soon as possible.
Okay.
With regards to hand anomalies, we've seen, I've seen my share of, I think the most common thing that I would have encountered is something called a syndactyly, where the fingers are fused. So that may be wherein all four fingers are fused and only the thumb is separated out. Or there may be something called as macrodactyly, in which there are the fingers are very much enlarged and therefore really not of much use. So that has to be reduced. Other cases, the more complex ones wherein, you know, the hand is not developed, or the forearm has not developed further, or the forearm bones are not very well developed. So various, I've seen pretty much a huge gamut of hand and craniofacial anomalies, but largely during my training period. So since I'm now into private practice and most of my work is kind of focused on cosmetic surgery, I'm seeing fewer and lesser number of these cases. But once in a while, I do see some kind of cleft problems, children with cleft lip and cleft palate problems, so which require sequential surgeries. So you do come across a lot of them during practice. But currently in my kind of practice, I don't see them as frequently as probably what I dealt with during my training period.
Got it. So, Doctor, how in what ways do you aim to reduce scarring after surgeries? Because I'm guessing in plastic surgery, scars play a very pivotal role in determining the success of a surgery. So
yes, absolutely. So I think you kind of hit the absolutely the right spot there with respect to cosmetic surgery, because at the onset itself, let me make it very clear. I'm sure a lot of the listeners are going to be doctors or aspiring doctors. So the most important thing is, if there is going to be a full thickness cut or an injury to the skin, there is going to be some scar. If at all, the only place where there is no scarring that happens in such a scenario is in movies or in a fictional world. So as humans, our skin is programmed to scar as it heals, if okay. there has been a full thickness cut or a deeper injury. So the aim, therefore, as a cosmetic surgeon, and the ways I would kind of try and prevent or minimize scarring is, I think the first important measure would be to decide when to operate, when not to operate. If there is something that can be dealt with without surgery, without cutting, I would deal with it in that manner. So that itself would kind of help to minimize scars rather than trying to and prevent a scar. So rather than trying to fix it later on, it's better to prevent it.
Understood.
So once you kind of understand when to cut, when not to cut, that's a very important lesson to start off with. Once we do a surgery, however, when in a lot of cases, it's really inevitable and one has to operate and there's really no other non-surgical remedy for that process. Then when I do operate, I do kind of inform them that first and foremost, they have to rest that area. It has to heal properly. If it heals properly, it will scar less. The eventual outcome will be better. So rest in the initial period is a very important and critical component of the healing process. If the wound heals properly, then if the patient has a tendency towards scarring or forming a thick scar and things like that, hypertrophic scars or keloids, I would start off with some kind of scar treatment creams or with a silicone sheet. Or in some cases, especially when I know that this patient has a very strong tendency to develop keloids, I may even start something called as intralesional steroid injections into the area. But not very early on, but maybe about at a month's stage after the surgery, just to prevent it from going in that direction.
Got it. So, doctor, most people are under the impression that breast augmentation causes breast cancer. Is this true?
Breast augmentation does not cause breast cancer. I cannot be more explicit or clear about that.
Yes,
there's a lot of myth about it. I think breast augmentation by using silicone implants have started somewhere in the mid 1970s or so. Mm-hmm. Initially, the kind of silicone that was used was not of a very good quality. So therefore, may have been associated, or it was probably wrongly associated with the development of breast cancer. For a long time, therefore, the US FDA had not approved the use of silicone implants for breast augmentation. But subsequently, extensive studies have been taken, randomized controlled studies, as well as retrospective studies. And it has been now conclusively been established without any kind of issues that use of silicone implants per se does not cause any breast cancer. However, having said that, it may be a good option that a person or lady who has history of breast cancer, as in if her mother, sister, maternal aunt or grandmother has had a history of breast cancer, then you must inform your doctor so that they would investigate properly. And you must subsequently continue undergoing screening tests so that the cancer, if at all it develops, it is detected at an early stage and can be treated accordingly. Detection of cancer, however, sometimes becomes an issue after a breast implant. So it doesn't really lead to the development of a cancer. It may develop if the person has an inherent tendency to develop one. But if they do develop, the most common modality of investigation is a mammogram. But if there is an implant inside the patient, the mammography needs to be done in a slightly different way, which most radiologists are aware of and are equipped to do it that way. So they just need to inform their doctor that they have an implant in situ, which then accordingly the doctor can investigate properly.
Okay. Thank you so much for that, doctor.
If I may just add another aspect to this, is that I don't know if many people would be aware, but there is another form of cancer, which is kind of a lymphoma, that is now being there's a lot of buzz amongst plastic surgeons and a lot of talk about this amongst plastic surgeons, that use of certain types of implants may lead to a cancer in what is called as a capsule that develops around the implant. So it's not actually in the breast, but it's in the capsule that develops around it. And it's called as anaplastic large cell lymphoma. The short form for that is ALCL. Okay, so this develops in a capsule that is formed around the implant once it is placed inside. As a part of the healing process, the capsule is formed. And in some cases, this kind of a lymphoma can develop in this capsule around the implant. Although there's a lot of concern on this matter, but honestly, it's a very, very rare occurrence. They're probably just a little more than 1,000 cases reported worldwide until now. And trust me, I mean, there are more than lakhs of patients who are getting breast augmentation done with silicone implants every year. Yeah. So the number of cases are very less. And a lot of study is going on with respect to what exactly is causing it, what are the associated factors. Some things are clear, but the entire picture is not yet clear. So I will not talk much on that. But rest assured, since you asked me about a cancer, that's probably something that the patient needs to be aware about.
Yes, thank you so much for it, doctor. So what would you like to say to listeners seeking cosmetic procedures? Would you recommend it getting it at a young age?
Not really a good idea. Most of my cases, when they come in for cosmetic surgery, in most cases, my cutoff is 18 years of age, wherein at least the person, the patient is of a legal age to take a decision and sign their consent forms and documents. However, having said this, there are a few cases in which I may have indulged and done a cosmetic surgery procedure at an earlier stage. A few would be something, one of the common cases would be a gynecomastia, which is the development of enlarged kind of breast-like tissue in males, which may happen even in the adolescent age, like about 14 or 15 years of age. And some of these boys get severely teased and are extremely affected mentally and emotionally by that process. So some of these patients, considering their the emotional damage and the mental damage that it may cause to them in if it continues that same way till the 18 years of age, and it would kind of scar them permanently. So to avoid that, in some cases, I do a surgery at 18 years of age. Apart from that, I think some other cases, which probably would be a little quasi-functional aspect. So if there are some scars, or some, let's say in the case of a nose, if there is some nose obstruction and breathing difficulties that the person is facing. So I may choose to operate at a slightly younger age, 15 or 16, but I would still try and pull on till they are about 18 years of age. But in some cases, if the scar is causing a lot of disfigurement and again causing a lot of emotional trauma, I may consider surgery at a slightly younger age in these patients.
Got it. So, doctor, apart from the purely aesthetic purposes of plastic surgery, what would you say are the advantages of plastic surgery that many people do not talk about?
Oh, yeah, that's a very good point, actually. So, most people actually equate aesthetic surgery and plastic surgery. What they need to realize is that aesthetic surgery is just a small component of plastic surgery. So plastic surgery is the whole big pizza and aesthetic surgery is just a small slice of it. So there are so many more aspects to plastic surgery. There's basically things like trauma, reconstructive surgery, handling of congenital anomalies, which we already spoke about with respect to cranial anomalies or craniofacial anomalies, hand anomalies, etc. Reconstructive surgery, which may be trauma-based or because of following an injury, or it may be following an onco surgery or a cancer surgery. wherein large areas and chunks of tissue may be excised and which may need reconstruction. So that also comes in the purview of plastic surgery. And there are a whole lot of people who are completely dedicated to this field. And there's something called as microvascular surgery, which has kind of literally revolutionized reconstructive and other aspects of plastic surgery, wherein we can literally transfer any kind of tissue from any part of the body based on its blood vessel, which is supplying that chunk of tissue, to any other part of the body by connecting the blood vessels to some vessels in the vicinity there. So we can literally transfer bone, muscle, skin, nerves, whatever it is, to any part of the body where it is required. So that again is a huge change in plastic surgery over the recent years. Then there's some people who are dedicated to burns and management of burn patients. So that again constitutes and requires a lot of dedication. And because these patients also require continuing care with respect to their burn wounds and the scars that develop thereof. Another very important and a worrisome aspect of it is acid burn victims, because a lot of these patients have severe scarring and a lot of deformities that develop because of acid burns. So these patients also require a lot of continuing kind of care with a plastic surgeon. So these are probably the much more larger uses and role that plastic surgery plays in medical practice.
Okay. So I always ask this question to every surgeon I've interviewed so far, doctor, and that is, what has been a very interesting case for you as a surgeon throughout your career?
Oh, okay. That's a tricky one. Well, there have been many during my training period. I think the one that kind of comes to my mind immediately as you pose this question is where we encountered, and I say we because it was my entire team from my plastic surgery unit where I was trained. We had encountered a patient who had unfortunately cut all his 8 fingers except for his, the only thumbs were intact, because he kind of unluckily jammed his hand in the cutting machine that is used in these book binding establishment. So he was good enough, wise enough to bring all his 8 fingers, and we had tried to fix all his fingers back. And I remember it had taken us almost about 28 to 30 hours to fix, I think, 6 or 7 of his digits. We had kind of given up on one of the little fingers because it had been a long time and the finger probably does not survive for that long. Without any blood supply. So that probably has been by far one of the most challenging one in my training period. Apart from that, I think another very interesting yet challenging case would be, as I mentioned earlier, also of a hypertelorism, wherein the eyeballs are, the entire bony socket is too widely placed. So we literally go in, cut the bone, cut the skull open, go inside, cut the bone around the eye, and then shift it more towards the central area. So, and we have to actually literally remove some bone in the central area as well. So all this requires a lot of meticulous and precision kind of surgery, because one misstep and it can cause severe damage to the brain or to the meninges, and can cause, even have a fatal outcome. So those can be really challenging surgeries. I think from a private practice point of view, from cosmetic surgery point of view, one of the most challenging cases that any cosmetic surgeon would face is a redo nose surgery, nose job or a rhinoplasty surgery. Is that when somebody has already had a surgery done and they're not happy with the result and they want it fixed, it kind of becomes very challenging. One, because surgery, the dissection itself becomes difficult because of the scarring process. And secondly, the tissues don't kind of respond or kind of realign themselves in the way that a first-time surgery would do. So therefore, kind of delivering what the patient wants sometimes becomes even more challenging. And therefore, I think a redo cosmetic surgery, a rhinoplasty, would probably constitute one of the challenging cases in my private practice right now.
Okay. Finally, doctor, what words of wisdom would you like to share with listeners belonging to a younger generation who aspire to become doctors themselves?
Go for it. I think without any reservations, without any kind of second thoughts about it, I would say if you think you want to become a doctor, if you think you want, you like what you kind of see and hear about what a doctor's role can be, then go for it, because it is an extremely satisfying and gratifying field. I agree, it's kind of challenging. It has its excessive demands that it places on your life. So you literally get cut off from most of your friends, your family. You're literally kind of incarcerated in the hospital in a way. So I remember, I mean, my career was for almost 12 to 13 years. So during that time, I would barely spend much time with my family, my parents and things like that. So that it does take a toll in that way. But at the end of it all, trust me, it is extremely satisfying once you kind of start develop a particular liking for a particular field. And if you can actually get into that, there's nothing more satisfying and fulfilling than that. Plus, you see your patients getting better, you see really challenging cases coming about, and you kind of thinking, you know, putting your knowledge to use, discussing things with your team members. It's something that I don't think I would have been happy as I am doing anything else. So definitely go for it. Just be prepared that this is going to be something for the long haul, and it is going to be, there are going to be times when things are going to get very challenging. You have a lot of exams on the way, so don't get disheartened if you don't do well in your exams. Just keep swimming, as they say. Just keep moving.
Thank you so much for this, doctor, and thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule for this interview and for answering the question so thoroughly. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, and it has been a pleasure, an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, doctor.